This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 195 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, looks like we had some breaking news, and of course it's the day after we record, huh?
Yes. Well, we have lots of news this episode, that's for sure.
We had a great guest last week, and we've got lots of news because we loaded up last week's news and this week's news. But I think we probably should get started because we've got a dense show. So, shall we? Well, our breaking news this week, our first story comes from Air and Space Mag. Court strikes down drone registration requirement. You know, we've been all dutifully registering our drones as hobbyists, and evidently we don't have to do that anymore, and the FAA's trying to figure out what to do next.
That's right. There's some court cases that are floating around, court cases that involve drones of various sorts. And one area that's been contested was whether or not the FAA could require registrations for drones being used for recreational purposes only. Now, we have the challenge from John Taylor. He's a drone hobbyist in the Washington, D.C. area, and he contested this. He was represented by drone attorney Jonathan Ruprecht, and this ended up in front of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, Columbia Circuit, a three-judge panel, and they agreed with Taylor. They said that the 2012 FAA Modernization and Reform Act that was passed by Congress barred the FAA from imposing new regulations on model aircraft. And the court says that's just what this registration requirement is.
You know, and it's kind of interesting that we've come full circle, because this is actually one of those implementations that went so well and people were actually dutifully registering their drones, and it's all gone out the window. I understand the model aircraft issue, because model aircrafts have been around forever. I mean, Max, you and I have talked about flying model aircraft and model rockets when we were kids. You know, and hobbyist drones like our co-host on Airplane Geeks, Max Trescott, I mean, he went and registered his drones, got his decals and everything, and he's just a hobbyist. So I guess the FAA is going to now wonder what's going on. And just because you don't register the drones, though, let's keep in mind that you still have to abide by the laws, correct?
Oh, yes, for sure. Also, we'll put a link in the show notes to the court opinion. It's a pretty quick read, but to me, it boils down to something pretty simple. I read the ruling as saying that unmanned aircraft, when they're used for recreational purposes, are model aircraft. That's the first thing. I think the court correctly observed that Congress forbids the FAA from regulating model aircraft. That's what came out of the 2012 Modernization and Reform Act. Thus, the court ruled the FAA cannot require registration of unmanned aircraft used for recreational purposes, because unmanned aircraft used for recreational purposes are model aircraft. And finally, the court notes that if the FAA wants to register model aircraft, then Congress has to change the law. And that's pretty much it. Now, I mean, we should say that, as you're saying, David, this ruling does not affect commercial operations of unmanned aircraft.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And it doesn't modify Section 333 or change Part 107. All those rules for commercial operations are the same. This just applies to registration for recreational purposes only.
So you and I can't go flying near airports still.
Yeah, same as before. Different groups had different reactions. AUVSI was disappointed in this ruling. DJI said that they thought that registration was a reasonable thing to do. Of course, the AMA, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, they thought this was a good decision. The FAA did come out with a statement in response to this, and it's very short. It's just simply, we are carefully reviewing the U.S. Court of Appeals decision as it relates to drone registrations. The FAA put registration and operational regulations in place to ensure that drones are operated in a way that is safe and does not pose security and privacy threats. Finally, the FAA says, we are in the process of considering our options and response to the decision. So there it sits. This post that Jonathan Ruprecht put out is very good, covers a lot of aspects of this whole issue. It's called Complete Guide to Taylor v. FAA. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well if you really want to dig into, some more of the details, as well as some opinions, I think, as to whether this is a good or a bad thing.
So, is it a good or a bad thing?
Well,
I have mixed. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say because I have mixed emotions about this.
Yeah, I think at one level, it's probably not necessary for recreational users to register their drones when they're used in recreational purposes. There's a couple of problems or difficulties with that, which is that there's not really a strong dividing line between a recreational drone and a commercial drone. The line is how it's used, not what it is. That makes it a little bit difficult, I think, to deal with this from a safety standpoint, which is really what the FAA is trying to do here. There's an argument against registration because it's ineffective or it does not positively impact safety or anything else. And I think some of the folks who were opposed to this registration and welcome this decision are saying that they're not necessarily opposed to registration as long as it's effective. And they thought that registration as it had been implemented by the FAA didn't meet that criteria.
Yeah, I understand the AMA's viewpoint on this. I'm sort of disheartened. I think that it wasn't a bad thing to have registration for drone UAV operators. We don't have an official recreational organization like the AMA for UAVs, though we know that AMA has started to embrace UAVs. Likewise, AOPA has also embraced UAVs. But it was one of the few times that the FAA seemed to get it right, and I'm sorry that it's gotten shot down. They did it right, they implemented it, and got positive responses. If it wasn't such a bad thing, I don't think they would have had as many drones registered. I mean, and it's not just commercial drones. There were a lot of people just registering them who were recreational users. So I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of feedback for me saying that, what are you, nuts, David? This is, but because I tend to do that. But I'm looking forward to seeing what the FAA's response to it is.
I think there are maybe three possible responses, at least that come to mind right away. One is just to do nothing and just accept the fact that this is the way it's going to be and there won't be registration for recreational drones. That's one possibility. Another is that they actually could appeal this decision. It would go to the Supreme Court, actually. That's the next step up from this, as I understand it. But I don't think that's very likely for a couple of reasons.
We've got enough things heading to the Supreme Court in this country, so I think this would fall to the wayside.
And then the third option is to go to Congress and say, in the next reauthorization bill, or something between now and then, which probably isn't too likely, but at least by the time of the next reauthorization bill, that Congress legislate the terms for registration of recreational drones. And that's a possibility as well. So I don't know, we'll have to see what the FAA does next.
Yeah, well, it's a good conversation. So, yep. And this would be a great conversation for you guys to have on our Slack listener team. So we'd love for you to come to our Slack listener team. You can send us an email at feedback@theUAVDigest and join it, because I'd love to see the conversation on our Slack team on going forward with this. And maybe we'll continue a little bit more. But we need to move on. We've got lots of news.
Mm.
The next story is from giminternational.com. Atmos UAV launches Maryland. Being a Marilyn Monroe fan, I couldn't not open this article.
It's spelled a little differently, though, right? Marlyn.
But the Atmos UAV Maryland is a fixed-wing VTOL UAV designed for high-speed mapping. You know, I love these fixed-wing VTOLs, you know, these wings with fans in them, Max.
Yes, and they have some advantages over multi-rotors when it comes to things like surveying land or mining, precision agriculture, forestry, things like that. In terms of efficiency, certainly, and speed. So one of the advantages of a vertical takeoff and landing UAV is that it doesn't need much space. You can kind of just put it down on any kind of surface and up it goes and you're done. Something like this that has a fixed wing converts to horizontal flight, fixed wing flight, can fly faster. It's a more efficient aircraft. Atmos says that in the case of the Maryland, they can expect mapping to occur 10 times faster than with a multi-rotor. So that's a huge difference.
It is. And Atmos is also working on the software to fly Maryland, and it generates an efficient flight plan. You put in the size of the parameters you want, and it will think its flight plan through. And it's sort of got a geofence so that you're mapping your proper scenario. So pretty neat. I really do like these fixed wing rotor vertical takeoff fixed wing air. I just think that's so hybrid 50s.
But it really is the kind of configuration that's much more efficient than a multi rotor, especially for, you know, long endurance missions. If you're trying to use it for precision agriculture, say, and you're trying to map a large area or fly the sensor over a large area, you want the thing to move along pretty quickly, and it could take a while. So fixed wing makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, sounds like a great product.
Though I question, there's a line in the show notes that says, it's a Dutch company. What are you trying to imply with that there, Max? Being, you know, I was on the phone tonight with Vischer. You know, us Dutchmen have to stick together. So I'll leave you off the hook on that one. But let's go to the other side of the world, shall we?
China.
And this is from UAV Expert News. Heavy-duty delivery drones. JD.com says they're China's largest retailer. I thought that was, what's the online retailer? Marco Polo?
I think these guys are, well, I don't know. JD says that they're the biggest, but they're pretty big, really big, really big. But they want to get into drone package delivery in a big way. And I mean in a big way.
They want heavy lift drones that can carry more than a ton. I
had to reread that to make sure that that's really what this article said.
And it did. We've talked about pizza delivery. We've talked about taco delivery. But what could you deliver that's around a ton? Maybe an elephant? That's a large package to deliver. And I'm trying to visualize the size of the quadcopter to do it.
Yes, it would have to be huge, obviously. They're looking for the ability to transport products to remote areas. Probably in large quantities, or to go the other direction, move agricultural produce into the cities. So they're looking at a network, a 300-kilometer radius. and they're looking at, they say, hundreds of routes, as well as some air bases for some of these drones. And they've actually signed an agreement with one of the provinces, the provincial government of Shanxi. So they're gonna work on this, but they're gonna do a lot more too. They're planning to establish an R&D campus. This is in partnership with the Xi'an National Civil Aerospace Industrial Base. They're looking at doing some pretty significant work on this R&D campus.
5 kilometers of pipeline airspace, 1,500 square meters of drone R&D space, and more than 30 acres of flight tests. 30 acres of flight test space, just given the size of these drones, just doesn't sound like it's a lot of airspace to be flying these size UAVs. I don't know. Maybe it's me. We say this, China wants to move things in leaps and bounds, and this is one of those leapfrog kind of technology things that China seems to be wanting to do all the time.
Well, training. What about some changes to drone training requirements, David?
This is from our listener, Steve, and this is, we're going down south to CASA, the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, or Australia's FAA, and they now have a remote pilot's license, and training will begin June 1st to get your RPEL. So they're focusing on a license, unlike a certification where we have here in the FAA, a separate license.
So starting on June 1st, which is just a few days as we record this, applicants for this have to satisfy the training requirements. There's a training course that has to be conducted by a person holding an RPA operator's certificate that's authorized to do the training. They note that CASA, you can also apply to CASA for a flight test. They have a list of approved drone operators, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. It includes those who can conduct the training. So this might be a resource for those of you down under looking for where to get your training.
As well as, we'll also have in the show notes, CASA put a document up and a webpage up about why you should get your remote pilot's license. And that's flying drones remotely piloted aircraft in Australia. So we'll have a link to the show notes on that. So interesting way to handle the issue that we're not getting a certification, but they're actually issuing a license. So wonder how far along the lines we are for the FAA to follow along those lines, or do you think we'll keep the certification?
Yeah, maybe keep the certification, but going back to China, we see that they've got some registration requirements going into effect also June 1st.
Yeah, it's funny. We're talking about the FAA getting rid of, being told not to register, and China wants you to register, and this is from Isaac on our Slack team. Pilots of drones weighing 250 grams or more, or approximately half a pound, will be required to register with the CAAC, or the Civil Aviation Administration of China. You have to register online, and you have to use your real name, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I'm wondering what, I'd love to see what their online registration process looks like, but I don't read Mandarin.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get an opportunity to see that. Although some screenshots might be interesting. Maybe some of our listeners could send us some screenshots. There's been a number of instances in China where drones have interfered with commercial operations. In April of this year alone, in 2017, 4 drones grounded 60 flights in China. And that impacted, they say, about 10,000 passengers, and there's been a number of other drone intrusions reported. So the government in China is looking to respond to that, and a piece of that is requiring this kind of registration for drones over 250 grams. So yeah, we'll see what it looks like and if it does have an impact on safety in China.
And it's registration, and I'm pro-registration, I think. But let's move on. Back to the FAA. FAA releases registered private drone owner database, which is sort of now null and void because half of them don't need to be registered. The FAA has made available a database of registered drone users. Didn't we have this before? Didn't we get this like this time last year?
I think so. Maybe this is sort of this year's annual release. There's a spreadsheet you can download. We'll have a link to that in the show notes if you want to. It's an Excel spreadsheet. And you can browse through it. It shows the city, state, and zip code of each registered drone owner. It doesn't identify the owner or list any more details than that.
That's right. Because I remember there was like three people, there was like three drones registered in my neighborhood.
Right.
I remember doing this. I remember doing this, and we were looking up strange zip codes like Hollywood.
Yeah.
Now I remember this. So
I took a look at the spreadsheet, and as far as hobbyist owners, it shows 39,459 of them. And in the non-hobbyist category, it shows 4,899 owners registered. So, yeah, if you're curious as to see how many folks in your zip code or in your town have registered, you can take a look at this. I don't know if, you know, the court ruling is going to imply that the FAA needs to take this list down. That might be interesting to watch. I'll have to check and see if it's still up there. But for now it is, and we'll have the link in the show notes.
So our next one is from Navy.mil. And the National Research Laboratory tests autonomous soaring with solar concept. The U.S. Naval Research Laboratory is looking at long endurance unmanned sailplanes that use solar power. So what's this mean? A solar-powered sailplane. It's kind of a contradiction, don't you think, Max?
Well, I don't know. What they're looking is for UAVs that have a really high endurance. And the reason they're looking at that, well, there's several. In fact, there's a quote. This is the U.S. Navy says the solar photovoltaic and autonomous soaring base program. There's a mouthful. And the U.S. Marine Corps Expeditionary Energy Office, they want to improve the ability of unmanned platforms to support 24/7 information surveillance and reconnaissance missions. At the same time, you know, you've got long endurance, and you don't have to load up so many batteries to take with you into the battlefield. I think the idea here is partly it's sort of the control software that as one of these things is performing its mission, where it can act as a sailplane and just glide along, it doesn't need to consume any energy. At other times, then, you know, the power would need to be turned on. But all the while, you've got these solar cells on the wings, I think, that would be collecting energy for when you need it. So it's really, I think, a kind of a research into how do you maintain long endurance and, you know, use as little energy as possible to keep the aircraft up in the air and where you want it to be.
More persistent, you know, and the best part about it is it doesn't use fuel cells. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that?
Oh, dear.
But Max, since we're talking a bit about solar and electrical aircraft, yeah, I would recommend that we go back. If you're not a fan of Airplane Geeks, I know there's a lot of people who listen to this show who listen to both. But if you don't, you might want to listen to this week's Airplane Geeks, where we talk about electric airplanes. It was a great conversation. And while it was talking about manned aircraft, I think a lot of the technologies crisscross. We've talked a lot about electric aircraft. So you'd agree, Max, that it would be a good conversation for our listeners here on UAV Digest to go back and listen to Airplane Geeks and listen to how the manned industry is looking at electric aircraft.
Yes, and that was episode 453. So if you want to find that episode, you would go to airplanegeeks.com/453. That'll take you right there.
Well, okay, let's talk about swarms.
Hmm.
Drone Seed receives the first FAA approval for using drone swarming to deliver agricultural payloads. This is from the UAVDigest.com/news. This is from our PR newswire, if you don't know. If you go to our homepage, the UAVDigest.com, we have a PR newswire links that regular stories show up. So that's how this popped up, and another reason for you to go to our homepage. But let's talk about Drone Seed, Max. What's Drone Seed?
They've received approval to deliver these agricultural payloads with swarms. And what they're looking at is reforestation, something that makes it more efficient. So what you have here is a swarm of drones that actually plant tree seeds, sprays fertilizer and herbicides to keep the trees healthy. So this is apparently a big issue in terms of the magnitude of the forests that need to be reseeded, millions of acres they talk about. So this is really a fascinating concept, really interesting use of swarming, I think, where these things would sort of, I guess, buzz through the forest or the area that needs reseeding and do that from the air with a swarm. I think that's a really, really interesting idea.
Kind of makes me think of Star Trek. And when they redo the whole planet, the swarms of drone, the little robots take over and terraform the whole planet. But it's amazing how the technology's catching up to science fiction. Mm. Or the technology's going back to old school things, which this is from UASVision.com. Drone swarms could spoof the enemy. At the Special Operations Forces Industry Conference, the Vice President of Science and Technology at Syntel said drone swarms could spoof enemy drones. This could be a solution to using, you have persistent observation and using multiple swarms to spoof the other drones, which is kind of funny because this is going back to old school 50s technology. That being that there was something called a McDonnell Douglas quail, which was dropped out of a B-52. And the quail was a tiny little airplane, but on radars for the Russians or the enemies, the quail looked like 8 B-52s. So the one B-52 would drop off the quail, and then the quail would suddenly look like 8 B-52s. So to spoof radar. So suddenly you had nine that you were trying to track. So I can understand how swarms of little drones spoofing radars would be pretty effective.
Hmm. All right, David. Hey, how about a video of the week?
I like this video of the week. This is actually from Lockheed Martin. And they conducted their first underwater unmanned aircraft launch from an unmanned underwater vehicle. It's a lot of unmanned underwaters. What do you think?
Yeah. So they launched this UAV, a small UAV. It's called the Vector Hawk. And this came from a Marlin Mark II autonomous underwater vehicle. Now, there's a third party to this little demonstration, and that was the Submarin, which is an unmanned surface vehicle, and that provided surface reconnaissance and surveillance. So you've got three vehicles working together, the end result being this unmanned vehicle launched from under the water. And I think we can imagine a lot of applications, particularly military, for that kind of capability.
Yeah, this is a long time coming, but to be able to deploy an observation system like a UAV from a sub sitting off the coast of a hostile environment, and special ops but this is kind of cool that here's an autonomous vehicle under the water launching another autonomous vehicle being monitored by a third autonomous vehicle. That's something I think, Max, that we would have thought when we first started this show 195 episodes ago to be a little far-fetched and beyond belief.
You know, I can also think of some non-military applications, and I believe maybe even a couple of years ago now, We talked about a concept like this where you could have positioned, let's say, on the sea floor, drones in containers just waiting for the signal to deploy. So maybe if you have, for example, hurricanes that you want to measure when they occur, well, you could pre-position these things out there under the water and then activate them as a hurricane came through that direction to do the measurements and all of that sort of thing that you might want to do. So there could be a lot of, that kind of thing that you could do with this kind of capability. So it's interesting commercial applications, military applications, and probably a lot of other applications that we haven't even thought of yet.
All in all, it's the reason why we do this show. It's cool.
It's cool. That's why we do this show. It's so cool. All right. Well, David, I think that about wraps up this episode. So we want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us on our homepage, theuavdigest.com. And if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, we've got a handy little shortcut link. That's theuavdigest.com/195.
And of course, we want you to be part of our social media presence. So you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest, on our Twitter feed, which is Twitter at UAV Digest. You can, of course, become, like I said earlier, part of our Slack listener team, which is really taking off, and a lot of good conversations across the board on data as well as regulations, as well as flying. You can do that by sending us a email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, and we'll send you a link to our Slack team. Or if you want to send us a story or a listener mail or a video of the week, you can send it to feedback@theuavdigest.com. We'd love for you to leave some feedback on our iTunes account or Stitcher or Google Play. You can get some swag at our Cafe Press store, or you can become a sponsor at patreon.com, all of which you can find on our homepage, and check out our PR news feed at theuavdigest.com. So I guess with that, and since we're about to have a thunderstorm here and I might lose power, I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.